Ramsey TV.
I have never been more of a pessimist in my life. Yeah, I used to be an optimist. Probably up until age 10, I don't know. Yeah, but then it's been a steady decline, but the decline has been precipitous. Precipitous, I tell you this, in the last maybe 6 months to a year. I don't expect anything to go right, except spiritually. Spiritually, oh, it's a shining, bright future. This is Martin Zender from the edge of the bottom of the Florida Peninsula, but I would not be surprised if before nightfall the peninsula snapped off the rest of the continent right up there near Jacksonville and floated away toward Cuba and somewhere in between here and Cuba sank. But for a while we'd be on a boat the shape of Florida, except it's probably so heavy, especially down near Miami, that the things will tilt like the Titanic. Yes, the entire peninsula, it will tilt like the Titanic, and we'll all start sliding down. So the people from Jacksonville will slide down, and they'll scoop everybody else up. We here in Fort Lauderdale will be some of the last people scooped up. We will slam, along with the residents of Jacksonville, Daytona, Melbourne, Merritt Island, why not, and West Palm Beach. We will slide down into the citizens of Miami, crash into the building as Florida, like the Titanic, begins to go into the ocean between here and Cuba, and then it will snap in half like the Titanic did right around Daytona Beach is where Florida will snap, and it will just sink to the bottom of the ocean. And then, you know, sometime during the millennium, divers will go down and they will find the state of Florida, and they will film it, and they will come up with artifacts such as Mickey Mouse. But anyway, that's what I think is going to happen before nightfall. What other artifacts will they find? Will probably find some stock cars from Daytona down there at the bottom of the ocean. I suppose, yeah, they'll find Barry Gibb's house. He lives down in Miami somewhere. So this is going to be an interesting show. I will tell you this. I'm going to talk about the most epic, the most profound, the most broad and detailed passage in the entire Bible, the entire scripture, concerning God's knowledge, God's ways, God's design, the beginning of God's plans for us, and the end of God's plans for us. I mean, I'm optimistic about that. That is solid. That is sure. But every morning, I plan on waking up and reading of some terrible disaster. That is assuming I haven't snapped off. Assuming the Florida Peninsula hasn't snapped off from the rest of the continent. Okay. So we're going to talk about this epic passage in Romans, but first, because it's going to be that kind of show, I want to talk about how to be safe, why you are completely safe, or how to maintain a bubble of safety in a restaurant during the CV19er so-called plague, pandemic, virus, whatever. I got this email from an astute viewer of this show. Sent me this email. This is so funny. I'm going to go through this quickly. I mean, you might think this is so superfluous, even innocuous, perhaps indigenous. I don't know, but here it is. The subject is dining out during CV19er. Here we go. Number one, arrive at restaurant, pull three-month-old single-use surgical mask out of car's filthy cup holder, still slightly sticky from this morning's 84-ounce Diet Coke. Yeah, that's what happens. I use mine over and over again. Strap up with three-month-old single-use surgical mask. Put it on. 3 months old, put it on. This is the magical anti-germ barrier, and it is now engaged. Number three, proceed into restaurant opening door with the same handle grabbed by 200 people so far today. Four, hostess has immediate seating for your party of three. Walk past entire restaurant of unmasked people. It's okay because they're sitting down. 5, sit down. When you are seated, the anti-germ force field is now engaged. 6, safely within your anti-germ force field, remove mask. Browse menu while taking relaxed inhales of the same recirculated AC air previously inside the lungs of 200 people that also grabbed the door handle. Yes. Oh, that makes total sense to me. Now, next, 7, waitress drops off drinks barehanded. In some restaurants, they're bare. No, forget it. 8, grab drink with your bare hand. Sip leisurely, secure in knowing you're within your anti-germ force field of seatedness. Ah, yes, the force field of seatedness. We know it well. Number 10, this is gorgeous. Number 10 is gorgeous. Walk past 40 unmasked restaurant patrons, open bathroom with same doorknob grabbed by 100 other people so far today. 11, return to table past the same 40 unmasked restaurant patrons. 12, remove mask. Once again, safe in your anti-germ force field of seatedness. Waitress takes your sweaty drink glass with her bare hands, refills, hands back to you. You accept with your bare hand. Grab some bread and eat it. Same hand. Yum, yum. 13, meal complete. Mask on. Walk past 40 unmasked patrons. Make full body contact with at least 4 people waiting at the hostess stand as you squeeze your way back to the door. No matter, they're all also wearing their magical anti-germ barriers. 14, grab exit handle, which you are now the 221st person of the day to touch. Eating out has been completely successful. Number 15, breathe a sigh of relief, knowing that even after leaving the protection of your home and venturing out into the scary world of the public, you are essentially sterile thanks to your state-approved methods of magical germ mitigation. Number 16, return 3-month-old single-use surgical mask to car's filthy cup holder, ready for the next magical anti-germ barrier deployment. Thank you very much for that, Mike. I appreciate that. That's very good. Now, on a related topic, everything is out of God, everything is through God, and everything is into God. This is the most sweeping statement that can be made, and Paul makes it in Romans 11:36, while under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Yes, I talked about Spirit at the conference. You're going to hear that address probably next week. I'm going to be getting the files Friday, I have been informed. Now, I'm going to have to wear my glasses for this. Don't be shocked. I'm going to look extremely intellectual here in about 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Ooh, it's better than I thought. Dang, that's mighty fine. Okay, here we go. Now, I left off at the airport on Romans 11. It was kind of tough for me to do this at the airport. I was distracted. People were making announcements over the PA system about flight 8261 going to Chicago. But now I can concentrate. This whole section is about stubbornness and mercy, and that God is control of all of it. Paul saying to the nations in verse 30, even as you were once stubborn toward God. Yeah, the nations, they were once stubborn. They didn't know anything about God. How could they? God had not revealed himself to them yet. Yet now you were shown mercy at their stubbornness. Ah, we're taking turns being stubborn here. Yeah. Israel was at least listening to God in the early days. And the nations were, you know, worshiping trees, worshiping the sun. So the nations were once stubborn, while Israel was at least paying some attention to God and trying hard to do the right things. Now, Israel is stubborn. God has locked them up in stubbornness, and he's showing mercy to the nations. But, God said he's going to reverse all that, and that they also, Israel, will be shown mercy. This is when God picks up with them and brings in the new covenant. In a very ungentlemanly manner, God is going to infuse their hearts with spirit, and they're going to go boing, 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 and start doing the law perfectly. And it'll usher in the 1,000-year kingdom. So then Paul makes the sweeping statement, verse 32. This is when he departs the Israel script. Here he goes. For 4, God locks up altogether in stubbornness, that he should be merciful to all. I mean, this goes along with Romans 3. There's no one righteous, no, not one. God locks up at some time or another. Let's put it that way. God locks up at some time or another everyone in stubbornness. But he does that as a prelude to showing them mercy. It's the contrast principle. But the key takeaway here is that God is the gatekeeper. Yeah, he's the gatekeeper of this stubbornness because it comes and goes at his will. I was almost going to say at his whim, but this is not about a whim. This is about a planned purpose. Again, the joy of being let out of stubbornness, and I mean the light come on. You know how great it feels when you realize something? Like, I have some terrible dreams because I'm a pessimist, complete pessimist today. So I have these terrible dreams, and you wake up and you go, oh, you're so happy it was a dream. You're not sure at first. Like, you know, you just have some horrible nightmare. It's so real while you're in it, and then you wake up and, wait a minute, that's not happening. Florida is still attached to the mainland. Wow. I can get up and have a cup of coffee. Yeah, and you're so relieved. It's the contrast. The contrast. There's no relief without the panic. Likewise, there is no happiness at being shown grace and mercy if you have not known the opposite. If you have not been like buried and covered and grunting and groaning inside this spiteful, arrogant—I was going to say self-imposed. No, God-imposed hatred of God. Really, the stubbornness involves God. So God actually locks up people against Him. Against Him, He's doing it on purpose. It's just like the blind. When you're stubborn, you're blind to the things of God. Then you see. Can you imagine what it would be like to be blind from birth? Like some people, like that one guy was in the scriptures. Blind from birth, Christ comes, puts mud on his eyes, performs a miracle, delivers the guy. The guy can now see. Can you imagine the amazement of going from darkness to light? I mean, it happened to all of us when we came out of our mother's womb into the light of the world, but we don't remember that. But imagine as an adult being in darkness your whole life and then suddenly the world opens up to you. It's amazing. Is it Kodak? No. Some company makes these glasses that corrects color blindness. Somebody sent me a bunch of videos showing family members buying a pair of these glasses for their loved ones, and these people put on these glasses, and for the first time, these people who are colorblind, they put these glasses on, and almost all of them, they just start weeping. They're crying with happiness because suddenly they see the world for what it is. The world opens up. It's technicolor. It's like the Wizard of Oz when Dorothy comes out of her house after the tornado, swings it around, lands it in Munchkin Land, and she comes out in its full color. And it was shocking when moviegoers saw this in 1937 or 38, whenever the Wizard of Oz came out, something like that, because they weren't used to color. They weren't used to it. It's one of the first films that came out in color. So here's Dorothy coming out of her house in black and white, entering Munchkin Land in full living color. This is what it's like. You see, God is preparing everyone for the glorious shock of being shown mercy, of coming into his presence, of having sight, of seeing him, of seeing his kingdom, seeing his love, perceiving the joy he has. But he has to set it up. The writers of Oz, they had to set it up, the shock of coming into Munchkin Land. We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild. Got to set that up. So it's set up by this farmland. You see, in The Wizard of Oz, it starts with this dreary farm. It's black and white, and the storm's brewing. The clouds are there, and then it comes into this wonderful, colorful land of strange little people called the Munchkins. Oh, what could be better? What could be better? Oh, the only thing could be better is the witch throwing that fireball at the scarecrow. I wasn't happy that the witch threw the fireball at the scarecrow. I was happy that the Scarecrow survived it and maintained his sense of humor. So, throughout the rest of the film, it was amazing. I mean, he was alarmed at first, as we all were, but... All right. These last five verses of Romans 11 are so great. I'm going to have to take them one at a time. But today we learned God locks up altogether in stubbornness, does it on purpose. God locks up. He's the gatekeeper. He has the keys. God locks up altogether in stubbornness at one time or another. The people are stubborn before they are shown mercy, and it's the shock of revelation. The stubbornness comes first. My God, of course it comes first. In The Wizard of Oz, do you think we're going to be in Munchkin Land at the beginning of the movie and then go into this dreary world of Kansas? No insult to anyone in Kansas, but in The Wizard of Oz, it's black and white and overcast with a 100% chance of a tornado. You think we're going to go from multicolor technicolor to that? No. Do you think God is going to go from showing everyone mercy at the beginning, telling everybody how great he is, letting them see the light of revelation, and then plunging them into stubbornness? That would be nuts. God's not going to do that any more than you're going to wear a new mask every time you go into a restaurant. Huh?